think in terms of the church, I think it's not surprising, but the lack of adoption of digital and social, and video in particular, is very disappointing to me. That the opportunity is there for the church. The church is a 7-day production cycle producing content. This is their wheelhouse. And being able to translate that into what social demands to be a leader, to stand out, to target, attract, and engage the right affinity audience, it should be a no-brainer for the church. And yet, you still have people coming out of the woodworks saying that their church has not been on social at all.
Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith, and I have two special guests with me on this podcast. Now, this is our Legends of the Social Media Church Podcast, and I've got two legends here. The first legend I want to introduce you to, if you don't know who he is the founder of the Social Media Church Podcast, and that's DJ Truong. DJ, welcome back to the podcast that you founded.
Thank you. It is so good to be back and to be sitting with you, having pie and ice cream.
We're in Louisville, Kentucky. The RX 2018 conference, and DJ, I heard you say earlier this might be top 5 conferences, and I bet you've attended hundreds of conferences in the last decade. This conference? What makes it so special?
This one really touched my heart because they have the technical competency and the open hands and the open hearts to serve the church at large. And they're doing it collaboratively, open source, running it with a nonprofit, and really wanting to partner with churches serving churches together.
Yes.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It's not a vendor and a company trying to profit off the church, which some people don't like.
That's awesome.
I think it shows the church really being the church.
Yep. It's beautiful. And honestly, we had this conversation when I was at Community Bible Church. We had a hard time with our church management system. If Rock was really where it was today, then it would have been an easy decision for us. If you were a church out there and you were debating, I feel like I can say with confidence, and I don't work for Rock, and I don't, you know, I just think they're a great platform and a great community, and I was even more sold after being here. So this is a good time. So we're also joined here at the conference and at this table eating ice cream and pie with the original first guest of the Social Media Church Podcast many, many, many years ago, and that's the Kenny Jang.
Hello.
At Kenny Jang on Twitter and on Instagram.
Yeah, how many years ago was that?
Four plus years ago.
And in podcast years, that's like 28. Yeah. So that,
because I did 100 episodes, you've done 100 episodes.
And I had hair back then. I was actually interview number one, but DJ refused to put me on first. He let Kenny go first, and so while I was the first to be interviewed, my episode was number 2 on the social.
What is that true? That's not true, DJ.
Yes, that's the way. That's the way the numbers worked out.
All these
the
years,
numbers worked out.
Chronologically, and
so
Kenny was my inspiration.
I thought I was special.
He was
DJ.
The one that pushed me over the edge and started this crazy thing.
Yes, Kenny has his way of pushing people over the edge. And having his way, and so that's what happened. This podcast exists today because Kenny pushed you.
Yes,
and you were so generous to hand it off to me, and it's been through a lot. So what I want to do is revisit four and a half years is a long time in the life of social media and online church. Kenny, you just gave a talk today on online church here at the conference. I would love to hear from both of you what. How has online church changed the most over the last 4.5 years? As you think back what it was 4.5 years ago to what it is today, what's been the biggest shift in the world of online church?
I'll go back farther than that.
Okay.
2007 was when I started researching and
11
tracking.
Years ago.
2007.
Yeah.
So I started tracking and researching which ones were the churches doing church online.
Yeah.
In 2007, there was 7. 5 years later, there was 107. And then it's grown from there. And
how many do you think there are now? If you could guess a number, how many churches do you think are doing church online?
Boy, church online is such a broad category. There's even some churches that do a live stream and call it church online.
Yep.
And there's some that just do a sermon library and call it Church Online. So it's a terrible term, kind of like podcasting. What is podcasting, right? It's audio, it's video. There's people that don't even syndicate and call it podcasting by just posting an audio blog. So the terminology is terrible.
Yep.
But online church in the purest sense is with chat room or something intentional.
Some form of community.
Yeah, something beyond live stream and intentionality behind it. That's not just live stream. So that's kind of the best place I can draw the line. So, boy, how many would there be? I lost count. I seriously have lost count.
So what's changed?
Easily 300 plus that are seriously doing it with staff.
So it's amazing. I mean, it 10 years is almost not that long. You think about other things that don't change that much in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
For there to go from 7 to over 300 very actively doing it is pretty significant. You know, I would have guessed over 1,000.
Yeah.
But
well, I've heard numbers of people using CHOP, Church Online Platform, is well into the thousands. But they're not going to disclose the list because there's this thing called bandwidth that people have to pay for. And so I had an aha moment while I was building this list, big spreadsheet of churches that do live stream and stuff. It's like, well, maybe they don't want too many viewers. So they're really hard to find.
Interesting. So, Kenny, I'm curious, your take. 4.5 years ago, you were at Liquid Church at the time and really getting started in Church Online. So you've kind of been through even a lifespan of the Church Online development that you're hands-on with, and then you've been watching the whole thing. What's changed the most from your seat in the world of Church Online?
First, I think, is that you don't feel invisible anymore. Like, the legitimacy, like, even in today's room, the talk that I gave was in front of church staff and leaders who are considering launching a church online campus or ministry.
Yep.
And the questions and the follow-up, no one actually challenged the validity of it. No one actually questioned like what it even is. Everyone has some sort of inkling of what that means.
Yep.
And so 4.5 years ago, everyone complained that that's not real church. It's you know, it's not real community. There's no real relationships. You gotta be in person in the flesh, and that all has almost disappeared.
What? It's amazing. What technologies do you feel like over the last 4.5 years? What technology innovations have happened that you feel like have furthered Church Online being more of a reality? So the one that and I'll start. One that stands out to me is video conferencing. When I started doing online church, and it was probably 8 years ago, we wanted to have video, like Google Hangouts had just started, but they were too buggy. Skype was too buggy. Zoom wasn't around.
Google Hangouts is still too buggy.
It's still too buggy.
Skype is too.
And Zoom, I feel like over the last 4 years has really, and I feel like what Zoom has done is create much more personal interactions. So, you know, as we got into volunteer development through Zoom, when we got into online small groups through Zoom, the way it personalized our experiences, to me, that was maybe the most revolutionary technology advancement in the last 4.5 years. But I'm curious from you guys, what technologies have you seen really develop over the last 4.5 years?
For me, I think it's like Netflix, YouTube. And not just Netflix and YouTube on the big screen at home, but on your mobile device and your laptop. And the fact that, you know, kids today, they don't even watch TV together on the big screen. They watch it around the laptop. They watch movies on their laptop.
Yeah.
And so that's been, I think, one huge cultural consumer shift that allows them to imagine, oh, I consume content this way. Yeah. And then social, being able to interact and live chat and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I can piece that together in my imagination what online church might be.
Yeah.
I was going to defer my answer because I'm sitting with two veterans who sat in the driver's seats of running online campus, and I've only been a user. But on the user side, I think the increase in bandwidth has made the biggest difference in terms of availability. So it's available on mobile, it's available on tablet, it's available on desktop, and it's available when I'm driving my car now. I can and I have. During a drive on a Sunday morning, tune into my church service and participate, just like I always do on Sunday morning. So it's become a continuous rhythm in my life to stay connected to my own home church so that I feel like I'm still part of that community.
Well, and I think you can't forget TV Apps, tvapp.church, and really how incremental tvapp.church, I'm kidding, just plugging my own platform a little bit. But I'd say the other technologies is, you know, Church Online platform 4.5 years ago, wasn't that stable. And I think churches struggled of what, either do we build our own? Churches are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to build a Church Online platform. The way CHOP has really developed and created that invaluable resource to church leaders is incredible. I think about, too, Facebook Live. When we started onlinechurch.com, we used Media Social because that was basically Facebook Live. We wanted Facebook interaction, and so it wasn't as anonymous from a chat standpoint. Facebook Live is basically replaced Media Social, so it kind of hurt that product. But I think it made it a more native experience and helped people reach a lot more people. So there's been a lot of innovation in the last 4.5 years that almost feels slow when you're living in it, but it's very fast when you kind of take a step back and look at it. In the world of social media in particular, what have we seen over the last 4.5 years? What are some of those trends that pop, that come to mind?
Well, probably the biggest impact I can think of is how Twitter elected a president.
Ooh.
A very active presidential candidate on Twitter generated a lot of interaction and engagement. I think that had a play.
So some would say, though, that Facebook elected Obama and Twitter elected Trump.
There you go.
Which is interesting.
That's a good contrast.
Side note, Jack Dorsey and Trump don't get along, which is an interesting connection there. But yeah, I think there is no doubt that social media has been significantly influential in the most recent, I mean, you hear about all the stuff in Russia too. It's unbelievable the power of social media globally and in our culture. It is not a little hobby thing anymore out there on your side.
Yeah. It's ironic though that, you know, the most powerful man on the planet right now is addicted to Twitter, but yet Twitter itself is in trouble, right? The future is not clear.
He's keeping it alive.
He's keeping it alive, right?
Yeah.
You got the one who has the most airtime. Everyone's quoting what he says on Twitter, and yet Twitter itself is not taking advantage of that.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I think, I mean, if I think about 4.5 years, remember Periscope?
Periscope.
It's actually still there.
It's still there, but it basically came and went.
Yeah,
Vine.
Yeah.
Vine came and went.
Yes.
Marco Polo.
Google Plus. Still unofficially not dead. Officially not dead. I don't even know. Marco Polo.
Meerkat. Gone.
Meerkat. A lot of things. Instagram was a baby when this podcast started, and now they have 1 billion active users. Facebook went from probably less than 1 billion from this podcast started to now over 2 billion active users.
That's right.
That there is no slowing down of the shift of social media. Since the beginning of this podcast, and I remember DJ.
Mm-hmm.
I think you chose me to be on this podcast. I feel like it's got to be longer than 4.5 years ago. But you chose me to be on the podcast because my title was social media pastor.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And it felt. I remember telling people, and people were like, "That's ridiculous."
You were the first one in the world,
and I don't think it would be that weird now. You know, it was weird back then.
Yes,
but I don't think it'd be that strange anymore.
Well, and you're still weird, though.
I am still strange. And well, now my title is Chief Innovation Officer and Social Media Director. I don't know. I've still got a weird title. It hasn't stopped since my role as social media pastor. What else have you guys seen in the last 4.5 years that has maybe we could even speak negatively a little bit of what's frustrated you? What have you maybe not seen that you wish you saw, or what do you continue to see that you feel like, and I expected the church to make more progress in this. What frustrations, or do you think we've gone backwards with it?
Well, the cyberbullying thing was a big disappointment to me.
Yeah.
The shouting matches and debate, that's always been there, but it's been accelerated.
Yeah.
Because we have a president who's kind of the role model of shouting and name-calling. Racism has become more alive than ever, so there's a lot of tension and anxiety, and social media is aggravating that. So instead of being a level playing field where people can build helpful relationships, it's become a much messier place, more like a jungle. And that's disappointing because it has potential to do much better things. I had another thought, but maybe we'll come back. But
yeah, for me, I think in terms of the church, I think it's not surprising, but the lack of adoption of digital and social, and video in particular, is very disappointing to me. That the opportunity is there for the church. The church is a 7-day production cycle producing content. This is their wheelhouse. And being able to translate that into what social demands to be a leader, to stand out, to target, attract, and engage the right affinity audience, it should be a no-brainer for the church. And yet, you still have people coming out of the woodworks saying that their church has not been on social at all. And they don't even know what to do with Facebook. And so that's both mind-boggling and it's sad. You grieve that because it's made for the church. Church is about relationships. And yet, you know, we're not taking advantage of it with the capital C church.
And Kenny, one of the things you always say is social media should be more like a telephone than a megaphone. And I feel like what I continue to see churches doing is using social media as a megaphone and not valuing the relationships that can be formed on social media. I think the other thing that I continue to hear that you know what, it's changed a lot. You know, I felt like when maybe 5 years ago, I was still selling people on social media. I do feel like I hear less of arguments against social media and more help me catch up with social media. But I still feel like I'm hearing the conversation of if we engage online, we're encouraging people to skip church. And not understanding how the two go hand in hand—that it's not digital or physical. It's integrating both.
This is the way of life of culture now. People spend more time on Facebook than any other app on their mobile phone, and then people spend more time on their mobile phone than any other screen in the house. And then there's I think it's over 80% of Americans live within 3 feet of their phone 24 hours a day. And yet we as a church are ignoring all of those cultural cues that something has changed. Why is that? Just why is that? Why is there this distrust and lack of vision to say social, digital, this means of communication is it's seen as an expense and not as an investment?
Yep.
And that to me is just still mind-boggling to the core.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and by holding that back on that posture and hiding behind the corporate wall, if you will, The part I think churches are missing it, they're still treating social media like a broadcast channel and commercial, very commercial.
Yes.
So there's part of the thing they say about Facebook being pay to play, but I think Facebook also recognizes and has invested themselves in seeing the community aspects of church by how they can use Facebook groups. And they have a director or a manager that's specifically dedicated to helping churches use Facebook more effectively for building communities. So Facebook is helping churches to use social media because churches themselves, a lot of them are still hesitant because they don't want to figure it out for themselves. They'd rather have someone teach them.
I think that Sonona Jones has been here on the podcast, and there are a few interviews through the years that stand out, more than others, and mostly McKinney's on. But Nona being one of them. So when Nona was on the podcast, it was fascinating to hear Facebook is prioritizing churches. Facebook values churches. Mm-hmm. And what I've often heard is that we better get people off of Facebook because, that Facebook hates the church and they're going to shut it down. They valued mm-hmm. enough to hire, and mm-hmm. Nona is an incredible lady. I love it. I love that Facebook sees the value of the church and the good that church can do when they utilize a platform like Facebook. So,
how sad is it when a marketplace organization sees the beauty of the church and is trying to take advantage of that beauty and say that they can replace the church because the church isn't doing what it's supposed to be doing everywhere else in life? It's kind of ironic that the church is the model and yet not leading in the same time.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting. And we are here having pie in Louisville, and it is all of a sudden coming down. Rain outside. It's going to be an interesting run to the car.
It's a monsoon.
In a little bit. Here's where I want to go with this conversation, and I apologize for going a negative route for a minute, but I think it's healthy to really speak into some of the challenges. As you think through where the church holistically, or churches together, have come over the last 4.5 years, what do you most excited about? What are you most proud of that you feel like the church really did a great job in this way with social media or online church? DJ, as you were the original host, so I'm going to lean to you first on this.
Well, my first gut reaction is The Rock RMS. I am just enamored and amazed that churches have come together finally, but they come together, develop an open source, and they're paving the foundation. You really are paving the foundation for the future of the church and how they can integrate data with relationships, with messaging, and building community, and really not just serving their people better, but also reaching people better. And I can see how they're also going to, they're not just bringing together all the back-end administrative stuff, but they're also integrating social media and texting and giving, and just everything churches do that they're putting a common platform on. And I think that's the most amazing thing I've seen.
It's an exciting day. Churches are not necessarily playing catch-up to technology like they used to. I think really... there's a big movement towards technology innovation over the last 4.5 years that's happened and is happening collaboratively.
One of the things I think that's very encouraging is, again, kind of like how we've experienced at this conference, this open source community supporting each other, helping each other. Social media has allowed church practitioners to come together in a way that we haven't seen 5 years ago, four years ago. There's the large church comms group. There's a bunch of other groups. There's, you know, my own social media for churches group, which has 2,000 people in it. These groups are all active, and people are part of it because they want to share, they want to learn, and it's this posture of generosity, which I think social media, at the core, encourages. We see a lot of negative trolling and stuff like that with social media, but at the same time, there is this openness that social media brings, and when you bring it to groups, like I've seen in some of these church practitioner groups, I think it's something that wasn't available 4 years ago. And just thinking about, as we travel the country now, right, Mills, we traveled, DJ, we're seeing each other almost monthly, traveling all over the country to all these events and places. Almost every city that we travel to now, we actually can meet up with someone in some of these communities. There's even here. I mean, I'm not trying to poke at Louisville and Kentucky, but even in Louisville, we're finding people that we met from these groups here in Louisville. And so, no matter where you go now, I feel like this network and the connectivity of social media is coming into play for the good of the church.
And I want to speak, DJ, to what you were saying earlier, that a lot of that is generosity with time. These Facebook groups of people are being generous to lead and invest their leadership into something that isn't self-serving. And I think, and DJ, this is what I want to commend you. You started this podcast. You never sold an ad on the podcast. Mm-hmm. You bootstrapped it. You put in hundreds and hundreds of hours of your own time because you believed in the church embracing technology through online church and social media, and you started this conversation in a community forum. I essentially met Kenny through this podcast. You and I met, you set up the call with me, and then we became friends, and we met up for, if you remember, ramen noodles in Orange County.
Yeah.
And,
that might have been the first time you met Jake Randall, too.
I probably was.
Yeah. Or second time, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. But it was so interesting that the community that formed out of this podcast. I met a guy today who's been listening for years, and he's like, I just want to come shake your hand. Mm-hmm. And just it's amazing what you started, and how you selflessly invested. And I think as more have taken that lead, that wasn't normal when you started this podcast, but it is becoming normal. And I think a lot of these Facebook groups are speak to that as well. It's amazing how collaboration is happening, and we're pioneering these spaces together. And it's not as if we're like, we want to save our trade secrets. There's no trade secrets in the kingdom, you know?
No.
And so I think the collaboration is really exciting, and even how just people, churches celebrating. I think what I love seeing in these Facebook groups. Now, the Church Online group, if you remember, the Online Church Practitioners
yes.
group was one of the first, probably the first Facebook group that I ever participated in.
Mm-hmm.
That was my community, because I didn't have, nobody else knew what it was like to be doing this and figuring this out.
That's right.
And the way we learned from each other in that yeah. group was really fantastic.
Yeah, those are our peeps, man, right? Like,
those were our peeps.
Going back to the day.
Yeah. And they became real friends. I mean, I would yes. say there was real community. And I think that's what people almost, I still, it's interesting, people that aren't engaged on social media. There are people we haven't met, but I feel like I know because of their profile image. But a lot of the interactions we have, social media relationships are so real. And I think that's becoming more understood over time. But it's, they're meaningful.
I mean, I remember Nate Merrill from that group. Do you remember
yeah.
Nate? Never met him in person.
You've never met Nate?
Never met him in person. Never did a video chat or anything. But then I met him at eChurch last
yeah.
year. And there was a moment where we locked eyes. Didn't say anything.
I can hear the music right now.
And we basically did a scan of, you know, avatar photos and made a match. And you saw our eyes lit up, and then we went in for a bear hug without even saying anything. And I was like, I really hope this is Nate. but that's the community. You look forward to actually meeting the friends that you made on social.
Yes, yes. And I remember I was in New York at Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade many years ago, and you invited me for a cup of coffee in Times Square, and that's where we met. But we knew each other online for years before that. It is so fun. The community that's been formed. It's been so fun what's come out of the community out of this podcast. Mr. DJ, thanks for leading it. Kenny, thanks for being the top thanks. Guest in the history. You've been on 27 times as a guest.
Might have been mentioned 27 times. Not all positive either.
Yeah, just two or three times positive.
But it's been fun to be part of this community.
Yes, yeah, so we want to highlight Jay Crandall, you're missed at this table.
Absolutely.
And Nick Runyon as well. So we appreciate all of you who are part of the social media church community. We appreciate you continue to pioneer social media and technology to further the church and continue to navigate new and uncharted waters. And we're grateful, too, that you choose to do this collaboratively and that we don't have to do this in isolation. And so it's an exciting day in the church, an exciting day in technology. And we thank you for allowing us to speak from this microphone into your ministry. So thanks for being a listener to the Social Media Church Podcast. And thank you to Kenny and DJ for being legends. You can connect with them on social media. Just go to socialmedia.church and you can find the show notes, and you will find links to their social networks there. Thanks for listening.